Today we have two bills on our agenda. The chair is going to exercise prerogative and reorder the agenda. We'll hear Senate Bill 745 first. In order to orient the committee, we have Elizabeth Martin Mahar, who will give us a two-minute warning, a two-minute version of the bill and what it does. We also have Senator Dukes here, who's the principal sponsor, and we'll just go ahead and call her forward to help the committee understand what the bill will do.
We're here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What does this bill do?
All right. Well, Mr. Chair and committee members, what you have before you this morning was Senate Bill 745. Is it allows a surviving spouse of a war veteran to file a claim for a property tax exemption at any time throughout the year if the veteran has died during the previous or current tax year. So if taxes on the exempt value have been paid, then a refund shall be made for paid taxes and interest. It applies to tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2001. Now, under current law, we have a veteran's or surviving spouse partial property tax exemption. And each year, they have to apply before April 1st of the assessment year for which the property tax exemption is claimed. So for 2000, kind of the average amount of the exempt assessed value was $9,000 for a veteran or surviving spouse who had been certified with at least 40% disabled and who met the gross income requirement. If the veteran, war veteran had service-connected disabilities of 40% or more, the average tax assessed value is $12,000 for 2000. There's no income limit if you're disabled due to a service-related disability. There is very minimal revenue impact. There's only going to be a few cases each year in which a surviving spouse would want to claim their exemption earlier. And there's roughly only about, on average, $210 as far as a property tax amount for an exemption.
Questions for the committee on the orientation?
Work session.
Don't you think we should hear a little testimony first?
Optional.
We'll open the public hearing on 745. Senator Dukes, welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, for the record, I'm Joan Dukes, State Senator for District 1. And this is one of those very little bills that will do good things for people who truly need us to do some good things for them. I want to point out that the surviving Widows of Veterans program is actually a little bit larger. It applies to the surviving spouse of any veteran. And so it doesn't have to be a war veteran. When you get to the veterans exemptions, there are a few of those, and the ones that are larger are disabled war veterans and that sort of thing. But this is the surviving spouse of any veteran. And right now the glitch in the law is that they have to go in and file for this within, I believe it's 90 days after the death of the spouse. Many, many of these are elderly people who are struggling through Social Security and insurance forms, and we have cut back on the amount of money that we're paying for county veteran services officers, so the resources to help them aren't as great as they ought to be. All we're saying is when they come out of all of that and they even realize that there is a program, because this isn't exactly one we go out and advertise, and they realize that there is a program that they can go in and file and not lose that first year's help. These people are often not in the greatest of financial straits, although I have to say they're not all, they're not all older. This can happen to you at any point in life. But that's what it does. It gives them a few more months time period in which to be able to go and file their claim. Same program, they can just make sure that they don't lose that first year this way. You should have a letter of support from John Mangus, the head of the Department of Veterans Affairs. He's out of town and was unable to be here today, but sent his letter of support. And that's all I have.
Questions for Senator Dukes? Colleagues, we have a letter for the record. John Mangus writes in support of Senate Bill 745, and he says, quote, as you know, Oregon law provides a small benefit to certain veterans and their surviving spouses through a property tax exemption Many of the individuals receiving this exemption have reduced earning capacity because of their disability or because of their age, live on an often reduced fixed income. As I understand your legislation, added time would be given to a surviving spouse to meet the filing deadline for this exemption. I imagine that a filing deadline could easily be overlooked during a time of stress. Passage of this legislation would allow a grieving widow or widower more time to comply with the exemption filing requirements. Extending the filing deadline simply seems to be the right thing to do. I think I would concur. Any questions for Senator Duke? Hearing and seeing none. Senator Duke, if you'd remain. Mr. Weiss is here from the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, but I imagine that Mr. Weiss also concurs with this. Thank you. And I notice there are several veterans here. Would you stand and be recognized, please? Thank you for attending today and for all that you've done for Oregonians. The chair, hearing and seeing no other folks that have signed up for testimony, would like to open a work session. Work session is open on Senate Bill 745.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Move Senate Bill 745 to the floor of the due pass.
We're going to have a motion from the Vice Chair to move Senate Bill 745 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. The clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion passes. Senate Bill 745 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We're still in work session. Senator Corcoran, would you like to cast a vote on Senate Bill 745?
Sure.
And the vote
aye.
Is?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Senator Dukes, will you carry?
I'd be delighted to.
Senator Dukes will carry. We'll close the work session and the public hearing on Senate Bill 745. Thank you, colleagues. Thank you. Excellent bill, Senator.
Thank you. The only reason I'm not going away is that I have the next bill as well.
We're going to have to call security there. We need an orientation to Senate Bill 684. It looks like the entire committee is already on this bill.
That should be a slam dunk. It looks like the whole committee is a co-sponsor.
Ms. Martin-Maher, would you give us an explanation of what the bill does?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, with Senate Bill 684, it exempts from taxation real and personal property of a rural health care facility under the following conditions. Only the new construction of the facility can be exempt from taxation. The exemption must be first approved by the county governing board and then by authorized by the other local taxing districts in the county. The health care facility is located in a remote area where the average travel time to the facility is more than 30 minutes from a population center of 30,000 people or more. The property tax exemption is for 3 years, beginning on or after July 1st, 2002. And just as way of background, last session, the legislature approved House Bill 2079, and this measure allowed a property tax exemption for long-term care facilities, including like nursing homes, assisted living, and residential care facilities, and adult foster homes. But there was also an average residency rate of 70%, Medicaid in those long-term care facilities and a 60% Medicaid rate for foster homes. This exemption last session applies only if the governing body, again, of the local district adopts a property tax exemption by ordinance. This property tax exemption applied to all real and personal property of the facility, not just the new construction, and it began on July 1st of 2000. So as of 2001 tax year, though, there have been no long-term care facilities which have received a property tax exemption. So what's different with this is it is allowing health care facilities, is not distinguishing just long-term care facilities or adult foster homes. And this is just a three-year tax exemption, and it's just on the new construction or new personal property that would be in the new constructed area. The difference, though, is that the county assessor for this particular local option would have to distinguish out the new construction and what is the personal property that is used in that new constructed area if this isn't just a new facility. So there would have to be a separate accounting for it on the tax roll for that particular facility, what property is exempt versus what property is subject to taxation. But the revenue impact is uncertain because it does depend on the number of owners of rural health care facilities that would be requesting this exemption, as well as the value of that new construction and new personal property in the facility, as well as the number of local governments that would also be granting the exemption.
Thank you, Ms. Martin-Lahari. Senator Corcoran, did you have a question about this?
Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, knowing that this thing's greased and it's going to go through, I do want to raise my one objection to this bill, and that is being one of the only three people in the state of Oregon that voted against ballot measure 84. I am very distressed that there is not a local preemption in here, and we forced the tax credit. So allowing local governments to be allowed to weigh in on this is just beyond me. I'm just amazed. I'm just kidding.
Actually, Senator, I, you know, they say politics makes strange bedfellows. And I'm even sorry.
You were the other no vote on 84?
Sorry, I made that reference myself. No, I don't think I voted no on 84. What I think happened is that I expected the local taxing jurisdictions to grant exemptions. And as Ms. Elizabeth Martin-Mahar just explained, the total number of exemptions that have been granted under the previous legislation is zero. And that bothers me because not one of the long-term care facilities in the state of Oregon, which were intended to get some assistance, got it. And, of course, the reason, I think, is that the state didn't want to create a mandate, state funding mandate for tax exemptions, and the local jurisdictions are pressed for any kind of revenue, or should I say compressed. And so what's happened is we've done something that makes us feel good but doesn't really have an impact in the community. The effect was, I think that... whatever we intended, we didn't really accomplish. We put the burden on the local jurisdictions, and I've had a couple of conversations with our colleagues in local government at the county level, and they basically said that the legislature lacked the backbone to go ahead and make the exemption. If we intended to make it, we should have made it, instead of pushing it onto the local government, which essentially has to lose revenue in a direct proportion to the tax exemption that they give. So, Senator Corcoran, I think we share a concept here that maybe it wasn't 84. I don't think we should be putting unfunded mandates on local government. By the same token, if we intend to grant a tax exemption, we ought to do it. Senator Minnis, you have your hand up.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know how many applications for this exemption were made. Do we know?
Well, I know of a couple that never got passed to one of the jurisdictions. I got some correspondence on those. But, Ms. Martin-Mahar, do we know the number of exemption requests that we made?
Mr. Chairman, we do not. We may be able to look into that.
Well, I mean, Mr. Chairman, one way to address the issue is, I think you're granting a certain authority to local government, which is consistent with what they normally like us to do, although they do tend to like us to fund everything, too. And just kind of for the committee, we supply well over $100 million to local governments through beer and wine tax distributions, the vast majority of which goes into their general funds and they spend however they want. But you never hear about that. I just think you can't have it both ways. You know, if the local community has an interest in providing a property tax exemption, and if this is a local issue, then the local governing body of the county should be the one to make that decision and render, or at least suffer whatever consequence there may be from that, as opposed to the state constantly being the goose that lays the golden egg for everybody in the state. And we have to make certain decisions about what we're going to be able to appropriate and what we're not going to, particularly given the limited resource environment. Or we do have a potential VAT tax on the horizon, I suppose, but that might help. But in any event, it just seems to me that what we're doing here is appropriate. I'm ready to vote aye on this thing. But what I'm getting to is if we really, really, really want to know whether it's working, maybe we should ask that there be a report back to the next legislature with respect to the reasons why these were not granted.
The committee has within its authority, has the Legislative Oversight Committee for the Department of Revenue, the ability to ask for such a report. And if I could have staff prepare a report at the Senator Minnis, or prepare such a request at Senator, I mean, it's a suggestion. I don't think it was intended that not one of these applications be approved, but I think the issue was that it applied both to pre-existing and future facilities. This bill is prospective. It applies to healthcare facilities, so perhaps it's a little bit different focus. Let's hear from Senator Dukes about her intention for this bill. Senator Dukes, the public hearing on Senate Bill 684 is open. Would you like to help us focus on this bill?
I would, Mr. Chair. I'm Joan Dukes, State Senator from District 1. The two commissioners to my right, county commissioners, asked that we pursue this session. There is an interest around Astoria for more medical facilities. We're sort of at the end of the road, and for example, the addition of a dialysis center in Astoria recently was a huge boon, but when you're at the end of the road, you may be the county seat, but it's still financially difficult for people to encourage people to bring in the kind of money you need. So this bill says that if they buy a piece of land, whatever is existing there is going to continue to be taxed, because the other thing we wanted to focus on is that property taxes are not the source of revenue to local governments that they used to be. And so we were trying to protect anything that is there now as a way of encouraging local governments to support any effort to go forward with more. So buildings, any of that that's there today, would continue to be taxed. The exemption would apply to any additional improvements, any land, any equipment, any buildings or remodeling that they would do of buildings for medical facilities in the remote rural health service areas, which are already designated. I think that for some of these, when we do them and the word gets out, and that it may take longer than 2 years to get the kind of investment going. Now, I can't speak to the one that you were just discussing, because if that includes existing structures, then you know that may not be the case. But here, we may need a little more than 2 years if this exemption is going to work, to be able to get it up and off the ground and working. What I can tell you is that we need all of the help that we can get in rural communities when it comes to medical care and medical facilities, and that this is one more piece that we can use to try to do that. With that, I'm going to turn this over to Clatsop County Commission Chair George Kipke, who is sitting next to me, and Vice Chair Tim Gannaway, who is to his right.
Glad to see you here today.
Thank you. And good morning. For the record, I am George Kipke, the chair of Clatsop County Commission, and the commission has gone on record in full support of this bill. And what we've recognized, being a rural community and traveling around with other commissioners throughout the state of Oregon, is all rural counties have similar problems. And what we're asking with this legislation is so we'll be able to give the tools necessary for local governments to make decisions to be able to help promote rural health care. And some of the examples that can be given is the dialysis machine is also of interest within Tillamook County. And that dialysis machine is about a $500,000 investment. With that type of investment, it takes some serious thought to make that. What we have right now is the dialysis machine that was located in Astoria is now fully charted out for the week to where they actually could anticipate putting an additional dialysis machine. So there is a need in rural communities for this equipment, but the investment is so great that there's some hefty decisions to make on that. Through Senate Bill 684, we felt that giving the local jurisdictions all of the controls for the exemption would be the proper method, because there may be a taxing district that may view this as not a benefit to them because of the distance or actually the business that taxing district's in. That's why we wanted to make it clear in this bill that they have to come in with a resolution in order to exempt this particular investment. We recognize that the 30 minutes and 30,000 population center was also critical because we do know that there is facilities out there. What we did notice within that range, though, is what happens in those rural communities is what we actually do is we diagnose and stabilize. And when we do that, that means that we have to transport patients into the treatment area, and that's a traumatic effect on lives for the people that have to travel that distance. Not only is it traumatic for them physically and mentally, but there's a financial impact for them, and some of the elderly individuals, which are fixed income, can't accept that financial burden. So what we would like to do and see in a health care improvement is to be able not only to stabilize and diagnose, but also do the treatment. There is a need that could be coming up within the next year for a facility in Clatsop County. There is an interested party that would like to invest, but the huge investment is what is really the waiting factor. We lost our orthopedic surgeon here as of the 1st of April, and he was one of the well-known orthopedic surgeons in the Northwest. He's decided to take retirement, so we are now in the interim process with a orthopedic doctor, but we're losing his talents in the rural community. He suggested that it would be up to about a $5 million investment if he was to want to start his business today and have all of the treatments available for the rural community. As opposed when he started out, he was able to invest a smaller amount, but he still had limitations on about what his treatment would provide. He would also consider what he did as diagnose, stabilize some minor treatment, but any major treatment would then have to be sent out of the county. There's also other rural communities. I know that Coos County Commissioner has also talked to me about this piece of legislation and has interest also because they have a need to improve rural health care. So I believe that this would be a benefit for all counties. What I brought with me is a map of the state of Oregon, and the pink circles are actually the 30,000 population and the 30 miles. I know that this was as a crow flies, but it's the best we could do with the GIS program we have. And if you notice that the whole entire I-5 corridor would be exempt from this bill, but look how much of the rest of rural Oregon could benefit from this. So we feel very strongly that this will help out the whole entire state of Oregon, and I would request respectively that you pass this out of committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Commissioner Kepke. Any questions for the commissioner?
Looks like one of Judge Pryor's maps.
Mr. Cannaway, do you have any testimony you'd like to add?
Yes, I do. First of all, I'd like to thank the committee for the time to speak before you today, and I just want to say thank you to the committee members that have signed on as sponsors to this particular bill so that we could move forward. A little bit of background. When we were considering this bill, we talked to some of the professionals and some of the different facilities that we have in our own county here, and they were all very supportive of what we're doing. In fact, a lot of them were really surprised that their local officials, without them prodding, would be interested in the health care of our community. One of the physicians that I talked to was Bruce Bobick, who is an internist in Astoria. And he explained about the difficulties of setting up a practice in a rural area. And he had concerns about Medicare, Medicaid, and how the pricing structures go. and a number of other things that were really much larger than anything in this bill. And his comment to me was, well, this is like spitting in the ocean. And I said, well, yeah, but it's better than spitting in the wind. And we as elected officials recognize that in the future, we are going to have a greater need for medical facilities in our area than we are today. And so in recognizing that, we need to take some steps. And I told them that, you know, we don't have control over Medicaid and Medicare, but this is something we do have some influence and control over, and we would like to help the medical community deliver the kind of service that they would like to deliver. And he was very pleased with that. A number of the considerations that we ran into, too, was the fact that census data shows us that rural communities, on the average, have an older demographic than do the urban areas. In our particular county, it's exaggerated even more by the number of people who in retirement want to move to the coast. We have looked at the past, our commission, to PSU studies and population and projections that they make, and we can see that the average age is going to increase in our community. And this is why we're trying to move ahead with this, is we're trying to put policies in place that will allow us to provide for the medical facilities and services that our community will need in the future. We are lacking right now an oncologist and a urologist. These are two professions that are very much in demand for older populations. A lot of these older people have to travel 2 hours for either treatment or just to visit a doctor. And from an economic development standpoint, every county can study the leakages that they have in different fields. And in our county, this is one of the significant leakages, is in medical treatment. We would appreciate the opportunity as local officials to be able to say okay to a tax exemption to try to keep some of the employment that's associated with these services in our area. The property tax exemption is temporary, but the benefits to our community, you know, those are permanent.
Mr. Yanaway, Senator Minnis had a question.
Hi. Well, you know, I'm ready to vote this thing out, so anytime I go into a work session, I'm done. But you kind of raised another question that's a bigger and broader question having to do with the number of medical specialists in different arenas available within our population. I don't think that's necessarily a problem just in rural counties. It's a problem all over the state, including the metropolitan area, partly because of a specific training policy that that the state and others have followed in terms of trying to train general practitioners as opposed to medical specialists. Given that, the fact that there are more people entering general medicine as opposed to specialties, we've tried to move towards technology to provide access to different types of medical specialties like telemedicine and so on and so forth. Are those not alternatives that are available to you, and as opposed to, say, trying to lure a urologist to move to the community? Or is it possible to work through a general practitioner who has access to a urologist who can look at the various medical data and diagnosis and work in consultation with a general practitioner? Or do you have to actually have a urologist present?
Well, no, certainly you don't have to have a urologist.
Rheumatologist, whatever.
No, you don't have to, and what we have today is proof of that. But we as local officials would like the opportunity to have some tools at our disposal to attract some of these to create a better health care in our county.
I'd like to answer that. The answer is no. We don't have the technology in Clatsop County, or other rural communities don't have the technology for that system that you're speaking of. and it would be an investment also in order to have that benefit.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, it kind of reminds me of some of our general public policy direction with respect to, say, mental health, where we basically deinstitutionalize the mental health system and assume that we're going to have community-based mental health treatment programs only to forget to fund or build that side of the program and then thus push them into the prison systems and the jails and so on and so forth. But it's interesting to me that I remember some of the dialogue a number of years ago when the medical professions were saying, look, we've got too doggone many specialists, you know, we need to have gatekeepers. This is all kind of dialogue leading up to the health plan. We need more gatekeepers, more general practitioners, more general medicine, family medicine, and less persons in specialty positions. And the way we're going to, you know, offset that imbalance is we're going to have telemedicine and all of these wonderful technological programs. But we never really look back and say, is the doggone thing functioning? Does it work? It's interesting how we do that. And so it's nice to hear that it doesn't work, because there ought to be at least, I think, some analysis into the larger picture of whether or not we're actually, you know, both ends of our public policy, you know, kind of like in social engineering kind of experiments are working or not.
I've got a question for these two gentlemen. The opportunity to ask a elected public official is just multiple. Will you vote these exemptions? Is it your intention to actually use the bill?
Our intention is to use the bill, yes.
Okay. If you vote an exemption for one facility, are you going to feel a lot of obligation to vote the same exemption for all medical facilities? And your taxpayers may come to you and say, how can you treat this facility this way? I'm a taxpayer. I need the exemption. Let's have equity. You know, there's an issue of treating taxpayers differentially unconstitutional. So I guess the question for you is, if you vote this exemption, do you open the gate and you'll ultimately be forced to vote exemptions across the board?
From my understanding, that is our local control benefit, that we would consider each exemption on its own merits and base it on the benefit to the community. And that's how the process would take place.
And so as long as you're considering, you know, as long as you look down the road, and that's something you're aware of. We have two more witnesses that have come to the hearing to testify on Senate Bill 684. I'll ask the committee, do you have any questions for these two gentlemen? Commissioners, thank you very much for taking your time to bring this bill for our committee. Appreciate it very much. We have Tom Menares from Columbia County. He's the assessor. And if you want to bring up Mr. Phillips, that would be fine. Good morning.
Now we've heard the reasons they want to do it, we're going to get confused.
Well, I'll let the experts testify.
Welcome, Tom.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Linhares. I'm the Columbia County Assessor, and I'm here today representing the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. Surprisingly, I'm not here to oppose this exemption. Most exemption bills, assessors automatically oppose it. Part of the reason why we don't, there's several reasons why we're not opposed to this bill. One is it's very narrowly focused, which I appreciate. It only exempts new construction, and it only goes for 3 years. So those two limiting factors, I think, speak well of the drafter of the bill. A personal reason why I don't oppose this bill is Senator Dukes is the only legislator I feel comfortable hugging in the halls of the Capitol, and I wouldn't want to screw that up. So
that's not what you said 2 years ago. That's not what you said when we were doing Measure 47. Well, how quickly they changed, Mr. Chair.
Concerned about your
Well, I've noticed, yeah. Senator Corcoran, that hugs can be delivered in different ways.
Some good point.
I've heard a headlock referred to as a hug.
Mr. Chair, one of the and the conversation was started this morning about the foster care exemption that the legislature passed last session, and how dismally that program has taken place. This bill differs from that bill significantly. One of the things that this bill does is the proponent of the new construction, the doctor, if you will, goes to the county commissioners And then once the county commissioners approves the exemption, then the commissioners forward that paperwork onto the individual districts. The foster care home people, they essentially had to go hat in hand to each individual taxing district, and most of them, I think one of the reasons why we don't have, don't we have two, John? I thought we had two that qualified for the exemption.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips for the record, with the Property Tax Division of the Department of Revenue. My understanding was that there were two. There was one granted by an ESD in Clackamas County that resulted in no tax savings, I think because of a compression situation. And then there was another, pardon me, district, and I think it was in Klamath County that granted it, but they had no facilities in their area. So I think that's my understanding of the results.
So this bill differs from that bill because obviously you're not going to request an exemption unless you've got some plans on doing some new construction. It's not a blanket exemption for existing facilities. So I think there are some differences, and I think this bill will be effective in terms of what it is trying to accomplish as opposed to the foster care home bill. Assessors hated that bill because it was inefficient, and there were some problems with the bill administratively. There are some problems administratively with this bill, and Senator Duke suggested that we work with her to see if there's any things we can do to improve the bill on the House side. One of the things that assessors would actually prefer is rather than giving each district a choice, and so one facility might get approval from the county, the school district, and the fire district, another facility might get approval from the county, the sanitation district, and the port district, we would actually prefer from an administrative standpoint is if you can get an agreement on the exemption, then the property is exempt for all the taxing districts in that jurisdiction, not pick and choose, depending on what mood that particular board is in the night they deal with this exemption. But we can, Senator Duke said she would be willing to look at that on the House side. Administratively, that just makes more sense.
Question, right, Mr. Vice Chair.
Tommy, thank you. You could do that under this proposal here. I mean, there would be nothing to prevent the Clatsop County Commission from working with the other jurisdictions when they had an application and getting that all up front.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, that could certainly happen, but under the bill the way it's written now, each district still has to pass a resolution or an ordinance approving the exemption.
I think you'd have to. I think you'd have to do that anyway. At least, as I've been instructed from legislative counsel when I work these, the only way that you can have all of them exempted at once is if you have some kind of like an enterprise zone application where you actually have the state declare it. Otherwise, you can't have one local jurisdiction committing it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I think you're correct, but then you get into the state-funded mandate issue that Senator Corcoran is so fond of.
Only acting that request of the local government.
Senator Minnis has a hand
up. Well, given the structure of this particular bill, is 3 years a long enough window? And I'm assuming if you're talking about new construction, you've got all of the processes to go into siting and getting your plans approved and so on and so forth, and then you've got to run around and get all these local governments to sign on. Is three years enough time?
Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, the 3 years starts, that's the number of years the property is exempt.
Yeah. Oh.
And the 3 years starts the first tax year after the facility is placed in service.
I get it.
So you take 2 years to build a facility, and then you get 3 years of exemption.
I'm only 3 years.
Things can happen a little faster in a small town.
You can try to do something in Portland.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, 3 years, that does coincide with the three-year enterprise zone program. Whether or not that's what they use to pick the 3 years, but that's...
I'm on board. Aye. Yeah.
Mr. Phillips, did you have something that you wanted to add to?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I was just going to mention a few things in terms of administration. Tom has hit on some of them, but just for clarification, and this may be something we can work with this group before it gets to the House side, but definition of a healthcare facility. we would be interested in maybe talking a little bit more about, you know, whether that includes a long-term care nursing facility or what exactly your wish is. What policy are you setting in terms of how broad you want that defined? In terms of a filing deadline, most exemptions have a filing deadline, whether it be April 1st. Most of them, I believe, are April 1st. And if there was some kind of a date certain, it doesn't appear as this bill has any date certain in it. It has a number of days for things to be processed, 180 days, 10 days notice, those kinds of things. But if there was a date certain that the assessor could learn of this exemption and then process that, that might be helpful also. And if there's a process for disqualification, if you're only wanting certain facilities defined under this bill and then it no longer becomes qualified, is there ever a case that you can envision where you'd want a disqualification of the exemption? I realize it's only 3 years, so, but that's just something for consideration.
Mr. Vice Chair?
John, in lieu of having all these things defined statutorily, the way it's constructed now, would that provide enough latitude for the department to define it through administrative rules?
I think we could probably work on that, yeah.
I mean, some of the things you're talking about, and this is my experience with the enterprise through the years, is probably better done through administrative rules.
Yeah. the deadline, if I might, Senator Beyer, the deadline for filing might be
statutory.
It's nice to have it in the statute because I'm not sure if an assessor could then feel the latitude to turn them down. If it comes in October, that could be problematic. But there is a canned language in the statute in 307.162 that just sets it out for almost all the exemption programs.
I think I know what you're talking about. You could pretty easily put that in an amendment on the House side.
I would think so.
Other questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Troy?
Tom, this relating clause is one of the great ones related to taxation. So it would be possible to go ahead and clean up the bill from last session and actually, if it would be the will of the committee, to include those exemptions for the foster homes, right?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, I think that would be quite feasible. I'm not sure exactly what those changes would be. Quite honestly, there's been so few of them. I think most assessors, after a great deal of consternation, have just sort of forgotten about that exemption because it isn't happening. But if the committee were interested in doing something to maybe change that particular program so that some facilities could, in fact, take advantage of it, that could certainly be done in this bill.
So this motion right here is, it's not a football, is it an indication, but actually that we will assume the House will do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions for the committee?
Mr. Phillips,
hearing none. Mr. Phillips, did you have something more to add?
Mr. Chair, one more comment. A reference was made to districts deciding whether all or a given health facility would qualify. In other words, if you had two or three different applications, whether you would exempt. On the other program that was passed last session, we looked at that question and whether a district could say, here's a facility that there's two facilities requesting this, and we're going to deny one but grant the other. And we asked for a legal opinion on that because and the legal opinion came back that it's your decision to exempt or not exempt certain properties. And if the local district decides to grant that exemption, then it would be to all facilities that qualify under the statute. So, and that's not something that couldn't be relooked at, but and just maybe that's something we can look at in the House side. But I think that was the legal opinion we received.
Other questions from the committee? The only question the chair has is that the bill in a present form requires the county to maintain the jurisdictions to maintain a split role. That is to keep track of who has the exemption. Is that going to be burdensome to the counties, and would that possibly be considered a state mandate?
Mr. Chair, it does require that accounts be administrative, you know, new accounts be set up, either because the new construction has to be separated from the existing property or because differing taxing districts approve the exemption. Therefore, the tax rate would be different. That's one of the things assessors didn't like about the foster care home bill.
Quite honestly, I was never as excited about it as some of my colleagues. It's a something that has to be done administratively. It's not that big of a deal, and it can be done.
And it could be accomplished through the existing chart of accounts.
Excuse me, the existing what?
Chart of accounts within the assessor's office.
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay. Let the record show that that would not be, at least in the chair's opinion, an additional mandate from the state. Colleagues, I'm sensing consensus in the committee. Is there any further questions for this panel? Actually, I'd like to thank Mr. Lynn Harris for his enthusiastic neutrality on this bill.
He supported it.
And Mr. Phillips for reporting that there's a 200% increases in the exemptions granted under the previous legislation, and having found out that one of them is approved, but not for a particular facility. So I guess we can count that as 100% improvement. We're in work session on Senate Bill 684.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Move Senate Bill 684.
I think I've identified a carrier for this bill. The Vice Chair moves Senate 684 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any questions on the motion? Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, so ordered. I'll ask for a volunteer carrier for this bill.
You want Senator Dukes to carry it?
Senator Dukes has volunteered to carry the bill. So ordered.
I need to prepare a memo from the committee.
Additional Marine volunteer.
Okay.
Maybe.
You mean for Senator Dukes?
Yeah.
Okay. I think you closed it.
Fold it in.
Are we out of
here? Okay.
You just lost form.
Okay.
Don't forget the $30,000. We are in adjournment until tomorrow.